Herzlich willkommen zu Menschen im Porträt. Unser heutiger Gast ist einer der außergewöhnlichsten und inspirierendsten Persönlichkeiten aus Amerika. Ich freue mich sehr auf dieses Gespräch mit Jen Bricker. Herzlich willkommen. Welcome.
Thank you.
You were born without legs. This sounds very, very difficult. What was the beginning of your life about? The first weeks and months of your life? What happened in these times?
Yeah, so I was born without legs, left in the hospital.
Left in the hospital?
Left in the hospital, yep, put up for adoption. Okay. And then the first 3 months of my life, I was living in a foster home. And so it's interesting because it sounds, I mean, that sounds like a really rough, what some would say, bad way or ugly way, or man, someone born in those circumstances for sure is destined to have, you know, a really hard life, or nothing great, of course, can come from that, you know, because so just when you hear those sentences, it's like poof, it's like a hit in the face, you know, and I can thankfully say that that's just none of that's true, you know, that everything got turned around and flipped upside down and never was perfect, of course, but my parents, you know, were always wanting a baby girl. My mom always wanted a baby girl. And she had three boys, and she couldn't have kids anymore.
Your adoptive family.
My adoptive family, yeah. Which is, of course, I say my mom, right?
Of course, yes.
And so she always wanted a baby girl, always felt like she was supposed to have four kids, but then she had three boys, and then she couldn't have kids anymore, right? So, but she didn't, you know, she didn't give up with faith and praying and believing, and for 10 years, I mean, this wasn't like a month or a year, this was a long time. And so, because she just knew. She knew in her bones. And one day she heard about a baby girl that was born without legs, put up for adoption. And it was like a light bulb went off. And she was just kind of like, oh, that's her, you know. And that was it. She just knew that they were supposed to get me. And never even seeing a picture of me.
Wow.
Never seeing a picture through the whole process. And then, you know, kind of talk to my dad about it, and he gets a couple words out, and they're all in it, calling the social worker. And long story short, they got me against all odds. I mean, they had never adopted. They had never fostered. They knew nothing about basically anything that they should have known about. And it was really miracles, like one miracle after another. And I don't say that lightly, that they got me, you know, against all of the odds against them. So, and then they just, you know, raised me with this. They were just the parents that were supposed to raise me. I mean, period. Because they weren't the most educated. They weren't the most scholarly. They didn't have the most money. They were just totally regular people that were totally extraordinary on the inside.
But very special, I think. What was so special about them?
Yeah, very. Their heart, their character, their determination, their consistency, how they led by example, that was powerful. Because you can say, their thing with me was, don't say can't, never say can't. Take can't out of your vocabulary, right? And so, but it's beyond just a saying. Because if it's just, anybody can say that, anyone can say that, but not everybody will live that. And that was the difference. So I saw them living these things. Like they said, you know, you were born like this for a reason. God doesn't make mistakes. And there's purpose in you not having legs. And so you, of course, again, anyone can say that. Or you can say that to make someone feel better or cope with the situation, whatever. But they believed it. Wow. And it was consistent through and through my entire life in every action they did. And that is powerful.
You raised up in this very special family. Can you remember when you first felt your passion for gymnastics?
Yeah, I felt, it's almost like as long as I can remember, very young, like 5, 6 years old.
Okay, well.
Yeah, watching it on TV, loved it, you know, and I thought, of course I can do that. I mean, you know, when no one tells you you can't, then that's what you believe, especially as a kid. And so I thought, yeah, maybe the balance beam isn't going to be my best sport, you know, but I can make it up in other ways and be strong in the other sports. And that's just how my mind was thinking. And so I started beginner tumbling classes. Tumbling is, I grew up in a really small area. So mm-hmm. we didn't have full gymnastics. Mm-hmm. Full gymnastics is the four events, you know, the uneven bars, for women, the floor, the beam, and the vault. Mm-hmm. So it power tumbling mm-hmm. is just the actual tumbling part. So the mm-hmm. flipping, twisting, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And that was really big in the Midwest, in the US. Okay. So that's what I competed in. I started beginner classes in first grade. So I would have been seven, mm-hmm. something like that, six, seven. And then had such a natural talent that mm-hmm. they let me start competing. Whoa. And I was the first person with no legs to ever compete mm-hmm. in power tumbling. Mm-hmm. And of course this was, there was no special division for people with no legs. Mm-hmm. This is not in existence. So it was with everybody else, just Whoa. Regular sports, yeah.
When you first told your family and your friends that you're going to do this kind of sports, mm-hmm. how did they react?
Well, this was, I had already been doing volleyball, softball, basketball, of course, with everybody else, you know, mm-hmm. and I was just a natural athlete. So I was really good in all these sports. Mm-hmm. And of course, there were challenges. I had to learn to do things differently, of mm-hmm. course. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't on the net at the volleyball, you know, mm-hmm. I was very short. So mm-hmm. I had to play to my strengths mm-hmm. and then learn how to do certain things a little bit differently mm-hmm. in each sport. Mm-hmm. But I never wanted anyone to give me special treatment or make anything easier or make any exceptions. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be good because I was good, period. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think people were that surprised who knew me that I was then going and doing tumbling, you know. My parents weren't that surprised. You know, people just who knew me, mm-hmm. I was always like, boom, mm-hmm. always so kind of full of, I don't know, fire, I guess. Mm-hmm. And personality, always a social butterfly, mm. wanting to know what's going on, you know, in people's lives, and nothing's changed. And so I don't think people who knew me were that surprised. Mm. People who didn't know me, they were the ones surprised.
When you started with competing and with training in gymnastics, mm. what was the biggest challenge for you?
I would say I was my biggest challenge. Just I was so hard on myself. Mm. If I didn't learn something immediately, mm. I was so frustrated, and I thought, oh, I'm not good, and why can't I learn this so quick? And it's like my coaches were great because it was like, Jen, and my family also, give yourself a break, take it easy. I mean, you just literally started trying, calm down, it's fine, you know. And then also, I'd say one of the biggest things I remember was as I was advancing in levels, mm-hmm. there was a point where I place where I came to a point that if I wanted to advance, I had to do certain skills. Each skill had a level of difficulty, mm-hmm. which means you got higher points, and mm-hmm. that's what everybody wanted. Mm-hmm. Well, I couldn't get a certain height mm-hmm. because this was, you know, they were really heavy springs, the mm-hmm. floor mm-hmm. that we competed on. So when you have legs, first of all, you're already taller, mm. right? So when you just jump, you mm. can, you're already higher. Mm. Then when you land and you hit it with technique, you can go much higher. Mm. So I was limited, of course, because of just the element of being smaller, mm. not having legs. And so I could still flip, I could still twist and get high for my body. But to go up to the level that I should have been advancing to, mm. There would have had to have been certain exceptions made. Mm. So I had to make the choice. Do I advance and have exceptions made, or do I stay where I'm at and have no exceptions made? Mm. And ultimately, I decided to stay at the level because I didn't want there to be any, like, 1 ounce of a reason for someone to say, well, she won because, mm. you know? I couldn't deal with that. That was mm. like, yeah. So I would say that was one of my biggest challenges, mm. yeah.
But you did start to compete with able-bodied
athletes. Yeah, always. I never competed in a sport that was for disabled people. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, my mindset as a kid, well, first of all, I didn't know anybody mm-hmm. else who was mm-hmm. disabled. I mm-hmm. didn't know anybody until mm-hmm. I was an adult. So I didn't even think I was one, mm-hmm. you know? I was like, nah, not me, that's different. You know, it's not how I identified, because it's also not how anybody treated me at home, at school. And I think a lot of it is just every one of us, we are a lot more responsible for how other people treat us than we think. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, if I would have been going around living life, feeling sorry for myself, being totally insecure, you know, like, oh, what? Are you just looking at me because I don't have legs? Something, you know, weird like that. It would automatically make the other person feel, oof, on guard, uncomfortable, uneasy, whatever. But, you know, it was never, thankfully, I had the freedom for it not to be this huge weight. It was never, there was no weight. I loved who I was. I loved that I was little. I thought it was cute, you know, and like, I had no problem. So it gave other people then freedom to also not have a problem. Right? So that was a really interesting lesson I've learned so far. And it's interesting.
And when you started to compete, what was your first big success by heart? Or in your heart?
In my heart.
I said, wow.
Yeah.
I did.
I won state champion 1 year in my division.
Okay.
So everyone, you competed in different levels and different divisions, you know? So when you got awards, you would get awards, of course, in your division with the people you were competing with. And so that was like, of course, that felt really, really good. Being a state champion was awesome. And I would think, I think even bigger than that was going to the Junior Olympics. So Junior Olympics was, you couldn't really get any higher in, you couldn't go any higher. And we were in Virginia. I grew up in Illinois and it was Virginia. So it was pretty far away and it was a big deal. And people from all over the United States were there. And you had an opening ceremony just like the Olympics. And it was like, I was so proud of myself. So I got fourth in my division, which there were, of course, far more people. So fourth was like actually really awesome. So even though it wasn't first, it was far more of an accomplishment for me being in the Junior Olympics, which was just a much higher, well, as high as you can go, and still doing really well. So that was awesome.
This sounds like a story of success, but were there any moments of failure on your path?
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's like I said, there was the constant, just I trained a lot, of course, and there was, I was so hard on myself. And that was like, I was my biggest enemy. You know, it was like literally my worst problem was me. And I remember I bruised my tailbone, at the, you know, from hitting, because of course it's different. And I was out for a long time. I had to sit on that, you know, those pillows, we call them donut pillows. I don't know what you call them, but the circle pillows with the hole in the middle. And I had to sit on that for months because it was, and I thought, man, am I ever going to be able to tumble again? And, you know, they were just, there were, there were, of course, setbacks and failures and things as a kid, and many more as I got older. Yeah.
But how did you keep your strength to carry on?
Yeah. Well, for me, my faith was always the biggest part from as long as I can remember. I mean, I guess you could say it started with my parents pouring into me about faith and believing in God and believing that I was born on purpose, not by accident. But then as I got older, it started to become personal and it was my own. It wasn't just because my parents said that or it sounded good, you know, or whatever. I started seeing that to be true. And I was like, wow, this is really, that's actually real. You know, being born like this was for a reason, and I started seeing it, like tangibly seeing that and how it was reaching people. I wasn't trying, I wasn't asking at all, especially as a kid. I was actually so annoyed. I was on TV so much, and people were always, you know, because no one was doing what I was doing, of course, with no legs. And I was so far, like, not even getting it, you know, and yet I was being used to reach. I was started out hundreds, then thousands, and then millions of people as I got older. And it was like, wow, this is so incredible to see that there is purpose through that and big purpose in that.
When continuing your career, what was your first idol? Was there a...
I would say when I was younger, with competing, when I started watching gymnastics, like I said before, I saw this girl, she was a gymnast on TV, she was competing for the US team, but I knew that her blood was Romanian. Her family was from Romania. And I thought we looked so much alike. Her name was Dominique Mocianu. And I just related with her. You know, well, I thought we looked alike, which was cool. Mm-hmm. And I knew, my parents had told me from the adoption papers mm-hmm. that my biological family was from Romania. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh my gosh, like, so I was totally relating with her, you know, on TV. And we look so much alike. We're both Romanian, you know, backgrounds. And we both were doing the same sport, you know. I loved it. So she was the person that I really just connected with. Mm-hmm. Yeah, more than anybody.
Wow.
Yeah.
On your way of success, what was your biggest success in power tumbling?
In power tumbling was, yeah, definitely what I said, the Junior Olympic State okay. Championship. That okay. was as a kid, and in that sport was definitely those mm-hmm. two moments, I would say, for me as a kid, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Your amazing story is spread all over the world, in newspapers and in news shows in over 100 countries mm-hmm. worldwide.
Yeah.
You are doing a lot of your work together with your husband.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can talk about a little bit about you married a few months ago.
Yep. Yeah.
About him and you and your work and message together.
Yeah, definitely. So I've been a professional acrobat and aerialist and speaker for about 11 years now, wow. traveling all around the world. And 6 months ago in July, mm-hmm. on July 12th, I got married, and my husband is actually from Austria. And all, you know, and everything now makes sense, right? But, and we met actually while I was speaking at an event.
Okay.
In Austria. Yeah. Okay. He bought my book in German, and the rest is history. Actually, the rest is a really awesome story, but we're not here all day. But, and so since we got married, so July 12th, 1 week later, we were in the Philippines on our honeymoon / mission trip. More of a mission trip than more work than a honeymoon, but we wanted it that way, you know. And we actually prayed about it, and we said, you know, we don't want to go just where we want to go, just to be laying on an island and doing nothing. I mean, we would get bored after a couple of days. So we prayed about it, you know, and we another long crazy story, but we ended up realizing that the Philippines is where we were being led to go. And neither of us had been there, which is cool. Mm-hmm. So somewhere neither of us had been. And we got connected to this missionary pastor who was American, living in the Philippines for like 16 years. Mm-hmm. And we traveled all over for three and a half weeks, all over. Schools, wow. universities, churches, wow. radio, television, wow. the biggest radios and morning TV shows. We were going everywhere. Speaking together, sometimes in front of 10,000, sometimes in front of 100, 150, and everything in between. Wow. Kids, students, the whole, you know, kind of average public, whatever. So that was the beginning of our marriage. And since then, we've been all over Austria, all over Germany, all over Hungary, and the U.S., everywhere. And so, so we're both speaking together, and now, just very recently, we started performing together. So mm-hmm. he wow. plays professional trombone and also sings, and I do aerial performing.
Wow.
And that goes together quite beautifully in a very unique way and exciting for us because we couldn't have planned something like that. It's just so fascinating how that's all going together, and it's just like full speed. We're so busy.
Wow. Wow.
24/7, it's, you know, and he's going to become, get a green card and live in the U.S. And so while we're waiting on the green card, we're over here on this side of the world. Wow. And, you know, you think, oh, well, it's good to just kind of be together and wait it out. But no, we've been put to work and it's been amazing. So it's been a really, really fascinating story. And I think it's just kind of the beginning.
Well, and yeah. this story together started with your book. The title is Everything is Possible.
Mm-hmm.
You told me it's published in 11
languages so far,
maybe millions of sold copies worldwide.
German and English.
In English and German.
Yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about the book and the message of the book?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the book is from zero to the adoption, to my family, to my faith, to performing, from competing, traveling around the world. Everything basically, and it's got some kind of kick in the butt motivation in there too. So it's kind of a holistic, it's not a self-help book, it's not just a chronological, you know, book biography. It's really everything in between, and talks a lot about my, shows my personality, lots of humor in it. And so really, it's really, I'm proud of the book, very proud of the book, and most proud. I mean, it became a New York Times bestseller, so that's awesome, that's amazing. But to me, what's even more incredible is the fact that it's in 11 languages.
Wow.
Reaching people in languages I don't speak.
Wow.
And to me, that's the most, that's cool.
All over the world, yes.
Yeah.
We talked about your career in gymnastics. You mentioned performing. What are you doing as a performer?
Yeah, so in 2008, I started performing professionally as an acrobat and an aerialist. So the acrobatic side, I toured with Britney Spears. I did a trampoline act with my old partner. This is a competitive trampoline, so you go very, very, very high on these trampolines. So it takes a lot of technique, a lot of, you know, discipline and training. And then the aerial side is maybe if you've seen silks that hang from the ceiling, okay?
Yes, of course, yeah.
So that would be under the umbrella of category as an aerialist.
Wow.
Or Luft Acrobat in German.
Yeah.
And so that, I started performing also in 2008, simultaneously with the trampoline. And then in 2011, 2012, I started performing solo with silks and stuff. And so it's just so artistic, so beautiful, and very physically demanding. But what you see on stage is beauty, you know? Beauty and strength, I really love that combination. Yeah.
We talked about your life and about the challenges and what you're doing today. What is your most important message for young people who are searching for their personal way of success?
Well, I would say the biggest message I could give to anybody, especially kids, would be that everybody does have purpose here, that no one is here by accident, that everyone, we all have gifts and talents and abilities, and they're all equally as important. I think that's so important to get burned into our brains, is that just because someone has more followers or is on TV or has a book or whatever, it doesn't mean that their talents are more important. It just means that their purpose is different, period. And people, I think, so many people think that their life is not interesting and they don't matter and it's no one pays attention and their life is boring and they're not on stage, so it doesn't look like this person's, and so I don't have value. Or what am I doing? I'm just aimlessly wandering around life. But how awesome is it to know that we all have purpose in this world, that there is actually plans, there are plans for us, and that through our gifts and talents, we can change someone's life. That is something I think would excite anybody. And it has so much deep meaning and power, and it gives, it also takes the pressure off. It gives true freedom, because then it's not all about you anymore. And I, to me, thank God, because when it's all about you and your pressure, your responsibility, the weight is all on you, we cannot carry that burden. We just can't. We'll fall apart eventually. Maybe it lasts for a while. Maybe it lasts for a couple years. Maybe you're really tough and it lasts half your life. But at some point, you'll fall apart because we just were not made for that, you know, to carry that weight. And also, it's not sustaining. Like, I would have burned out years ago if it was just all about me, myself, and I. That's just so not motivating anymore. After a certain point, it's like, and what else? You can get the biggest awards, the most accomplishment. You can go the most places, have the most extreme experiences, and it's never enough. It will never be enough, you know? But when you live your purpose and you know, like, wow, I can be used to reach other people, and that it's really not about me, but it's about me and using what I was given, what I was born with, talents, gifts, abilities, whatever that is, to reach other people, well, then it's like, to me, that's freedom. That's liberating.
Well, the last question is, for me, the most important question of the whole interview. If in 100 years from now, a young person asks, who was Jen Breaker and what made her so special, what would you answer?
Well, I would have to say that God is what makes me so special, because it's not about me. It's not me. I didn't create this life. I didn't create myself. I didn't even want to be a speaker. So that just shows you how much I know about life and what's best for me. So the biggest thing is that, you know, what makes me important is the light that shines through me, and that that comes from there, not from me.
Thank you for your time, for the interview and your inspiration. Thank you very much.
Thank you.